out there, everyone in podcast land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like, as we said last time, things. And another episode of our as yet untitled WWE review show here on the Front Row Network. I don't know, the show's so lame we can't give it a name. Is that kind of good?
Sure.
Well, it might be a self-fulfilling prophecy with this pay-per-view. This is where we review all of the latest pay-per-views from WWE and just give you kind of our take on them. I'm Jeremy Gechner, the editor-in-chief, and with me, the undisputed Shawn Michaels of the Front Row Network, Mr. Lou Hare.
I think if anything, it's like what, 86, 87 Shawn Michaels, maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
Just, bleary-eyed and haggard and...
Yeah, we're not chucking people through barbershop windows yet.
Haven't quite figured it out yet, but you know.
I think that it's a compliment. Let's, let's say like, you know, comeback Shawn Michaels.
I guess to say if anything, I'm like WrestleMania 14 Shawn because my back is just always killing me.
And you regularly get knocked out by Mike Tyson.
I do.
Yeah. Well, either way, we are not talking about WrestleMania 14 today. Would that we were. We are going to be breaking down last night's The Horror Show at Extreme Rules. I still can't get used to that title.
If Great I'm Balls of Fire, you are officially off the hook for the worst pay-per-view title of all time.
Oh, I forgot about Great Balls of Fire.
That is... I mean, we're already off the top. I'm trying not to be a downer today. But can we just take a minute to just dunk on this like lumpy name? Yeah. This name that like it is so forced to say The Horror Show at Extreme Rules. That sounds so there's not a single person who sounded natural saying that title.
Nope, not at all. One iota.
and there they are selling it with that WWE flair that only they can do. So good for them.
Work for your paycheck, monkeys. So either way, So look, right off the bat here, I got to say this. I'm gonna try and get as many good things in this as I said. And like I said, I don't think that I didn't like hate this pay-per-view or anything. There's just some very weird stuff that happened here. But the video package to open the show I thought was really good. And I think the WWE always has really good opening video packages, and they kind of got me psyched for this. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing WWE is consistently good at, it is hyping their own stuff.
Yeah.
And their video packages are great. It's like, okay, it sets the tone, it sets the mood, all of those things. Yeah, perfect. No complaints. And that's and I know we joked about the name. If they had just called it The Horror Show, like if they had just gotten rid of Extreme Rules and the July pay-per-view is called The Horror Show, or even when they first announced Extreme Rules, the subtitle of it was The Horror Show.
Extreme Rules The Horror Show. Way
that's
better.
Fine. All of like, but to like again, like choose the inverse of that to
literally
like
the worst choice possible.
But anyway, but no, yes, the packages were good. They set everything up. That's good stuff. Also, pro tip: if you have time and you are able to watch the pre-show of of the pay-per-views, and you want to like have them in the background, you can watch all of those video packages, kind of like in the Super Bowl. You can see the commercials before the big game. You can watch the so that later on, if you're like me and you have to pause and walk away and come back later on, you can fast forward through all of those video packages and you haven't missed anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you mentioned the kickoff show. We don't typically spend a lot of time on the kickoff matches, but this one was great, man. Kevin Owens and Buddy Murphy, don't call him Buddy. This is on the kickoff show. What the hell? What? Like, come on.
Well, they got to make, they got stuff they got to get to. They have to get to that big U.S. title match that we're going to get to in a little bit. This is great. I mean, these two are so good. They're very good at what they do. Murphy continues to show that he's like just should be a workhorse for that company for long time.
Shoot him up the ladder there.
You know, he's ripe for a feud. I think at some point when the Messiah was gimmick has run its course, the breakup feud between Murphy and Seth Rollins is probably what's going to set him over the top, because those matches are going to be great. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, Kevin Owens, it's good to have him back. It's good to see him do some stuff, and you know, good stuff all the way around.
Yeah, definitely. I got nothing to say there. The stunner looked great. Owens mm-hmm. using the super kick again. Mm-hmm. He, teasing that he might return to NXT, I'd be all for it. You know, it's, I think that, man, what would the Keith Lee Kevin Owens match be?
That would be so much fun. And kudos to Kevin Owens for finally getting everybody in the Performance Center to wear their damn mask.
For real, though. So, I mean, just Kevin Owens for the win for forever mm-hmm. and ever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we started off the pay-per-view proper with the tables match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura versus The New Day. And I got to say, man, this match was just brutal. I loved it. It was just a SmackDown drag-out fight here. All of them were very, very game in this match. There were so many awesome spots. You know, we'll talk about some of them, but ultimately it was a brutal-looking powerbomb from the top rope through two tables onto the floor outside the ring. Cesaro putting Kofi Kingston through the table. So now new SmackDown Tag Team Champions, Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro over The New Day. Somebody pointed this out on another podcast, but Xavier Woods has now won and lost the tag team titles without ever being in the center.
He didn't even get to be part of the decision. Come on.
I think actually it's now twice since he's been hurt. He's won and lost the tag team titles. What do you think of this matchup here, Lou?
Well, first I got to say, this was originally supposed to be the Forgotten Sons until Jackson Ryker let his Twitter fingers get himself into some trouble. And unfortunately for Cutler and Blake, they have to feel the brunt of that.
Yep.
But has there ever been a larger upgrade than from the Forgotten Sons to Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura? The Sons' loss is the rest of the world's gain, and we can forget them once again. No, you're never going to hear me complain about getting Cesaro and Nakamura wrestling on my TV, especially mm-hmm. against The New Day. Tables matches are always a little iffy for me because so much of the match is setting up the damn tables. And it's hard to get a flow going, I think, sometimes with these matches. So the table spots have to be good. Fortunately, these were really good.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the end spot was really good. I also like the fact that because it's a tables match, they were able to win the titles by not pinning, which is going to be a theme for the night. But it allows The New Day to say, okay, well now, you know, you put them through a table, we want our rematch, and they can have an honest to goodness tag team wrestling match, which just all the way around, yes. And I loved the innovation of the swing, Cesaro bringing the swing back to run into the knee from Nakamura.
Yeah.
It's similar to when he was with Tyson Kidd and Tyson Kidd would do the drop kick, but the knee looks even cooler, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's coming from Nakamura. So, yeah, good stuff. All good opener, fun stuff. And it does leave us with, I could see these guys go again in some other format and I'll be happy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that, I mean, like they... Cesaro, the big knock on him has always been kind of the personality, the mic work and stuff like that. I'm loving what they're doing with him right now, or what he's doing with it right now. The whole, like, I get no respect, Rodney Dangerfield angle, I guess. But the whole, like, you know, we're not respected here, which, by the way, they're kind of not. I mean, they really have not used Cesaro and Shinsuke like they should for a long time. But to see them put in this spot, and yeah, like, The New Day always have great matches. Kofi and Big E are still some of the best workers in the entire industry right now. These spots, like the one, they did a version of it a couple of weeks ago where Kofi gets, you know, leaped over the top rope. A couple of weeks ago, Cesaro hit him with an uppercut that just looks so brutal. And this one, they just smack his face with a table. And I was like, I think Kofi just died. I don't know how they take these spots. And honestly, and that powerbomb, man, we've seen like, you know, double table powerbombs before, but that one looked awful, man. That one looked so brutal. Why does nobody care about Kofi Kingston's back, Lou?
Yeah, because apparently he doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
He's willing to do it. And, you know, this was similar to the match at WrestleMania, that ladder match where those guys really went all out.
Yeah.
And you felt that they were working hard to do something special. And mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that you can say, you know, the New Day are great characters. They're great performers and entertainers. But, man, they bust their ass in the ring every time. And that's one of the things that's endearing about them, too, is that they put on just great match after great match, really with pretty much every pairing, because they've been literally the only tag team that's stuck together yeah. for more than 6 weeks.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of calls for Big E to like maybe go out on his own now from certain, you know, wrestling commentary channels. I don't know. You know, like I would love to see Big E get like a, you know, get into the world title picture at some point, but man, they're just still so good together, man.
Considering some of the stuff they're doing in some of these other singles runs, keep him in a tag team.
Yeah,
they can become 20-time tag team champs. It's fine. Yeah. It's
the reason they're 8-time tag team, soon to be 9-time tag team mm-hmm. champs.
Yeah.
I like 20. Let's get them to 20 sure. just every other day. All right. So after this, we get the SmackDown Women's Championship match, the champion Bayley taking on Nikki Cross. I did like before this, there's that little skit where Alexa Bliss, Asuka, and Kairi Sane are trying to like pump up Nikki. And, mm-hmm. you know, Asuka and Alexa are just really doing great. Like, Kairi Sane is kind of literally just like, well, you know, even if you lose, we'll still be friends. It's like, oh man, kind of ruined the moment there. But this match was great. Bayley just continues to be the best thing in pro wrestling right now. I mean, mm-hmm. she's just so freaking great in the ring. We'll talk about her Rey Mysterio promo later because it's fantastic. But this is, you know, there's again just a lot of gaga here on the outside with people getting involved, Sasha on the outside. Ultimately, this turns into Sasha giving Bayley, I guess, the boss brass knucks thing. Bayley nails Nikki Cross in the gut and then gets the 1-2-3 there to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship. What'd you think of this match overall here, Lou?
I thought it was fun. It wasn't a surprise. Right. And that is one of the critiques I'll have of the show. There were a few matches here that felt like kind of gimmies. Yeah. And so that does take some of the tension out of it, but the way that they set it up was good. I thought that, you know, look, I agree with you, Bayley and Sasha together, I think have just been money. I think they've been the MVPs.
Oh yeah.
No pun intended of WWE for a few weeks now. They've really stepped up. And so to see that continue, you know, and I think it's a good showing by Nikki Cross. I think Nikki has kind of fallen into a good spot in terms of she's getting on TV every week, she's getting matches, she's in angles, but she's finding new wrinkles to the initial character, which was you know, people who remember from NXT or debuts, kind of this wild woman, this kind of just feral,
total psycho,
you know, psycho, yeah, exactly, and to see some new kind of wrinkles in that is fun. I hope this maybe gets us back a little bit to that Nikki Cross that we know. And because I think she's great. And I think she can bring an intensity to a lot of matches that a lot of people can't.
Yeah, absolutely. Here. And I mean, and look, there's kind of a theory that I've heard bandied about with this and with the Asuka Sasha Banks match of just the fact that I'll just put it here right this way is that Sasha Banks, when she's helping Bayley win, she makes the exact right move at the exact right time. Mm-hmm. You know, she gets those knuckles in there right when she needs them, right, like, and right out there. And kudos to the cameraman, too, for getting that shot of the knuckle of the boss rings, like, right there with, like, mm-hmm. Bayley's name above it and everything. Like, it was very, very good shot here. But I agree with you, Nikki Cross, she's been doing so good. You know, I was worried when they made her Alexa's sidekick, but, you know, like, I think that it's really starting to flourish a bit. And you're right, she's still very dynamic in the ring. But you're right, I wasn't expecting Bayley to lose this match. She's been, what, 280 plus days now as the SmackDown Women's Champion, quite deservedly. It just feels like it's not quite yet for Nikki Cross, but I really want her to stay in the picture, like you said.
No, and I think it will be at some point. I think there's lots of room, but it's right now it's Sasha and Bayley's time. So, you know, you got to let them run.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't have the full results in front of me, but then this is where we get MVP and,
yes,
and Lashley here, right? Okay. So,
oh, boy. Yeah.
Let's talk about this, Lou. A title changed hands tonight because somebody said so. yes. Okay. So this is supposed to be Apollo Crews defending his United States Championship against MVP, who has been wearing his own U.S. title belt for the last couple of weeks, claiming that he is the champion because of a non-title win over Apollo Crews. And so Apollo Crews has not been medically cleared. Strong rumors that it's because of the coronavirus. And that, so MVP just comes out, says he's not medically cleared, so I win and I'm the champion. And apparently that's the result. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, okay. So in, on WWE.com, they still show Apollo Crews as the U.S. champion. Now we're recording this as Raw is going on, so I don't know if they have made an official declaration on this or not.
Right.
My frustration and my question is, why did this have to happen?
Yeah.
So Apollo Crews has not been on TV since we got the reports of the coronavirus outbreak. Now, I'm not going to speculate about anybody's health. That's none of my business. Mm-hmm. He's not on TV. That's the bottom line. Guy hasn't been on TV in a month. There should have been, if there should have been no reason to expect him to be on this pay-per-view. You had the choice to not do this.
Yeah.
You specifically chose to advertise a match with a guy you knew was not going to be there. You advertise, he was one, now no one's subscribing to the WWE network because, oh, I gotta see that Apollo Crews MVP match. I get it. But at the same time, why are you promoting something that you know is not gonna happen, only for him to show up and say, he forfeits, I have the belt. That's a segment you could have done on Raw. You got 3 hours to fill on Raw.
Yeah.
You don't need this on the on a pay-per-view for something that doesn't really even technically happen because he's not the champ. He's just declaring himself the champ.
Right.
And surely this is going to set up. Now, what I hope this sets up, I hope this we get a ladder match. I think we're going to get the old school, you know, WrestleMania 10, both belts hanging from the top. Unification ladder match when Apollo comes back. Problem is, I don't know when he's coming back. Nobody knows when he's coming back. I mean, I hope
for SummerSlam, but
I hope and I hope he's back soon. I hope he's well, and I think that would be a fun match if and when we get it. But like, why? And then ... we'll get there 2 segments later.
Right.
Pin, put a pin in this. We're going to revisit this in two matches.
Oh, God. Yeah. This is like, if this happened on Raw, then this would be the exact thing that like Ricochet and Cedric Alexander come out. And all of a sudden we have like a tag team match between, you know, them and MVP and Lashley. Like, you're right. This is such a Raw segment. Like, this doesn't need to be taking up time on Extreme Rules. Like, you could have easily put Owens and Murphy here, you know, Why not put this on the pre-show? Something like, it just doesn't really make sense why it's here. And totally right about, you know, this guy's out. Like, you know, either he is legitimately injured or, yes, he has the coronavirus. And either way, stop advertising it, you know, or at least turn it into like, you know, a backstage segment where it's like, oh, you know, Apollo Crews hasn't showed up. And, you know, like you can have MVP crowing back there, you know, like this didn't need to be what this was.
Yeah. Or you know, he got jumped, or he didn't get medically cleared because of an injury that happened to him in a match weeks ago that wasn't a big deal when it happened in the match.
Right.
Like, that is, like, even so, it's like, say, hey, we've gotten word that he got stuck in traffic or something. And then we can hear maybe somebody slashed his tires, something. This is one of the things that can be frustrating as a fan, is to know that there are, sometimes they take the creative takes the path of least resistance and just figures we won't care. And maybe we'd care more than we should, but this was one of those cases where it felt like they didn't think we were going to care that much. Did they just like, did the least amount of work for this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you, I'm interested to see where this goes on Raw this week. As you said, we're recording as it's going on right now, so we'll find out shortly. So maybe everything we said is just completely bunk here, but who knows? Mm-hmm. All right. So, do you want to get to some eye gouging?
Yeah.
All right. Yes. The first ever eye for an eye match here between Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio.
Every time I hear it, I just.
Doesn't get better.
No. No. So,
this is, of course, the match where you can only win it by gouging the eyeball out of your opponent. Mm-hmm. This was, of course, set up weeks and I think 2 months ago, if I'm remembering right.
Time's a flat circle.
Seth Rollins found out he was going to be a dad and decided to go comatose in a tag match and then mm-hmm. Pushed Rey Mysterio's eye into the steel steps, which actually at the time looked very brutal. I was like, holy crap, they just mm-hmm. did that on Raw. Mm-hmm. And so a couple weeks ago, though, this keeps fermenting. We got Dominic involved, and it turns out then Rey decides that the stipulation here is going to be the eye for an eye thing. This match is all over the place. It's what you really thought it would be. A bunch of great wrestling between these two mixed in with, hey, now I'm going to try to gouge your eye out. You know, Rey broke a kendo stick in half trying to use the splinters to get into his eye. Seth tried to use the end of a steel chair to get into Rey's eye. My favorite spot was Seth Rollins tripping and hitting his eye on the corner of the announce table because why not? They're really trying here. But the end of the match, they're over by the steel steps. Rey Mysterio actually hits a curb stomp on Seth Rollins, which is fantastic looking. He's going to go and push Seth's eye into the steps, just like Seth did to him. And Seth lands a brutal low blow with the back heel, very Jerry Lawler-like, I think. And then he ultimately does what he did months ago and pushes Rey's eye into the steel steps. And then it just kind of ends, you know. There wasn't really much of, I thought that maybe it wasn't supposed to go this way, but then, you know, we get, I guess, a brief shot of a fake eyeball in Rey Mysterio's hand.
Did we?
Seth Rollins, Lord, then pulls a full Robert Stone and spews all over the ring.
Why not?
Again, very sanitary in a pandemic setting. after this, yes, Dominic comes down. They're taking Rey back to the back there. Samoa Joe is doing his best to be shocked. And, Seth just kind of leaves looking like he, you know, what the hell have I done thing. And, that's how we're going to keep it there. So, man, Lou, the floor is yours.
The things we do for our kids.
Yeah, right.
Because Rey Mysterio has been almost murdered twice.
Yes.
This summer. Because he wants to stay connected with WWE so his son can have access to live his dream as a wrestler.
Right.
That's really what this comes down to. I know, yep, Rey probably as a performer wants to prove some other things, but he's primarily doing this to get his son Dominic on exposure, get him on TV, help him learn as a wrestler. That all of that's great, and Rey's earned it.
Yeah.
Holy cow. What are we doing? This kind of lies into my frustration with Extreme Rules as a concept of a pay-per-view and to begin with, because once you introduce stipulations, the matches become about those stipulations, as they should. You have Seth Rollins, arguably one of the best wrestlers in the business today. You have Rey Mysterio, arguably one of the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need... The eye for eye gimmick, first of all, we'll get to the end in a second.
Right.
But the match itself, the gimmick itself, makes sure that you're not going to have a typical wrestling match. It's going to be all these, as you elegantly laid out there, all of these spots contrived to deal with working the eye.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of people working the leg, working the arms in matches, never heard of working the eye.
Right.
So automatically, those two guys can't do necessarily most of the really great stuff they could do or do together in a ring and have this great back and forth match, which would have been, you know, these kinds of gimmick matches, I don't mind when it's two wrestlers who I wonder if they can go.
Right.
You know, it's like when Shane McMahon was doing these garbage matches and falling 50 feet, part of it was because I knew he's making up for his lack.
He's limited in the ring, so here's a big spot.
Exactly. So you don't need that with Seth Rollins and Rey goddamn Mysterio.
No.
But here we are. And then we get to the match, which, by the way, I will say this. I was squeamish at times watching them go over the eye. I will say that using the corner of the stairs, I thought it's a cool, innovative spot.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
well, and just before you get to that, like you talked about the wrestling aspects. The wrestling aspects of this were great. They're what you would mm-hmm. expect of a Seth Rollins Rey Mysterio match. Like, he's done it a few times now, but that little like slide out of the ring into like a sunset bomb into the mm-hmm. into the plexiglass, fantastic move. Mm-hmm. Fantastic stuff. And it's just like, yeah, why not just a big giant grudge match here between these two? We don't mm-hmm. need this gimmick.
No. And if you're going to do a gimmick that complements these guys. Give them, give them a ladder match, or give them a cage match or something like that, where there's some innovation they can do that isn't just, okay, well, we're going to use the same kendo stick we've been using since 1999, but we're going to break it this time.
Steve Blackman would be proud.
Exactly. He's got to be pissed that nobody's returned that to him.
I know, right?
And then you get to the eye spot. And, there had been talk that they were going to try to CGI it, which I was immediately like, no, please.
Yeah, which I was waiting for, honestly, because I didn't hear anything else.
So it's like, and that brings me to what I was going to say, too, about this whole pay-per-view. And we talked about the crowds and with Great American Bash, but the other part about it is about getting people interested in a pay-per-view when there's no audience. And this is a very different circumstances. Yes. Promising spectacle, spectacles that you're never going to see before. You know, this was one of two matches that had never before been seen. Mm-hmm. So like just the curiosity factor, I get why they would want to try something like this. I really do.
Yeah.
I don't think it worked. And I think what they went with looked corny.
Uh-huh.
And is probably has already been explained away on Twitter that he was rushed to a local medical facility, man. And they believe that he's going to recover
that night. So, they did a night. Report that night.
Like you can't even sit with it anymore. You can't like you think there are people who are like, ooh, I think Rory might really have lost his eye on that. Like, no, it's 2020, people. We get it. Like, and especially after he gets thrown off the roof of Titan Towers in May and shows up the next night. Like, no.
Yeah. He and Aleister Black just,
that's the second time he's evaded death. So good for him.
Good job, Ray.
Yeah. So, yeah, this was something that, okay, it happened. It's going to be a punchline for a while. We're just all going to have to live with it. And I think there's better things on the horizon for Seth Rollins. I think he continues to do really well with that character. I'm fine. I hope they move him on to something way better than this. And at some point, the Dominic storyline's got to pay off with him turning on his dad, you think, at some point.
Yeah, I thought it would happen maybe here, that's the way Ray, gets made vulnerable. But yeah, like, so are you okay with like how Seth Rollins ends this match with like that kind of incredulous look of like, oh my God, what have I done? Or like, I didn't want to do this. Cause I thought it would just be more badass if he's just like, see, I told you, you made me do this. You didn't listen.
And I'm assuming that they're going to pay that off tonight. And it'll probably be something of the nature of, look what people made me do.
Yeah. And I get in the moment you want to try and sell the grotesqueness of it, And I mean, like, look, the only commentary we got was, I think, Samoa Joe going like, it's out. And I get that you want to sell that. But yeah, it was just kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's a bit too much of like, oh man, what have I done? Like, no, be the badass, man. Be the Messiah. Right.
Have one of the refs puke or something, Have somebody in the audience like get sick by what they've seen. Not, Seth himself can be like, okay, this is what you wanted. This is what I,
But, yeah, exactly. But well, there's your first eye for an eye match, and let's all hope the last one. I give them credit. You made do with what you had there. But yeah, that's, I'm not interested in seeing this again. All right, well, let's move it on to the Raw Women's Championship match here. Sasha Banks going up against the champion Asuka. And I'll tell you about ESPN's official title of this match, like this headline match, with like the way they put the headline in a second. But this was, like, of all the matches tonight, this is the one I was looking forward to the most, because it's been said, just give these two women 20 minutes in a ring and just watch the magic happen, because these are two of the absolute best that have ever done it. Not just women wrestlers, just wrestlers, period. These two are just so amazing. You know, and this match lived up to it to the most part. Now, we'll talk about the ending, because it looked pretty sloppy, but I don't know if it was by design or if it was kind of brilliant or whatever. But again, that might talk into it there. But this was typically what you thought, just back and forth. Banks is working the arms in the back, and, you know, Asuka's doing her thing, and this all kind of starts breaking down here at the end when, you know, Asuka sets up Sasha for this German suplex off the top rope that she like lands on her knee on her knees, which just looked fantastic. I don't know if it was supposed to be the feet, but she lands on that. She goes to attempt something after countering Asuka off the top rope and kind of falls as she's attempting to do it. And she sells it as, you know, her knee is injured. And again, I don't know if that was quick thinking or if it was a botch, but it looked like a botch to me. It looked like she just kind of lost her footing a bit, but if it was that way, they sold it brilliantly. But then we just get some really crazy gaga at the end here. Bailey throws the tag team title into the ring to distract the referee. While this is happening, Asuka gets a miss capsule from Kairi Sane, goes to spray Sasha Banks in the face as she's arguing with the ref, but Sasha moves at the last second. She sprays the ref instead. He's selling it fabulously. Asuka then puts the Asuka lock in on Sasha Banks, but Bailey then gets into the ring, smacks Asuka on the back of the head with the championship belt, and then I can't believe I'm about to say this. Bailey takes the shirt off of the referee, puts it on herself, and counts the three to, I guess, make Sasha Banks the Raw Women's Champion. And I said this because on the title of ESPN.com, it says Raw Women's Championship, : Sasha Banks defeats Asuka, : champion in brackets, and then a question mark. So Sasha is your new champion, Lou?
I don't think so.
I don't think that's going to hold up.
Well, and again, much like the MVP situation, because yes, remember when I went back?
Yep. Pay it off.
In case you forgot, gentle listener, this is now the second time in 2 hours that a segment on a pay-per-view ended with a wrestler just declaring themselves the champion and no one questioning it.
Yeah. And she goes over to the timekeeper, says, ring the bell. He does. And then somebody plays Sasha's music. It's like, what? Like, what? Yeah. What the hell is this?
It's a bad idea on it. And I said earlier, now you have set up two storylines that are identical.
Yep. Absolutely identical.
You now have two storylines wherein the face is fighting the heel for a championship that the heel claims that they actually have when they really don't.
When they don't, yeah.
How do we have two of them on the same goddamn show?
Yeah, and on Raw. Like, come on, at least on between Raw. The brands.
This is why, like, people, you know, I have sat through lots of WWE. I have seen same storylines and tropes. It's like any TV show.
Right.
You're going to see the same tropes play out. You're going to see angles, but what's baffling is to see them go to that well twice in two out of three segments. We literally saw MVP do this a half hour earlier.
Yeah.
And then we see Sasha do it. In between, we saw Rey Mysterio get his eye ripped out.
Yeah.
That's the state of pro wrestling in 2020 right now.
Well, and you're right, though, because it could have been, like, you could make the argument that maybe this is the decision they wanted to do with this one. Then fine, change up the MVP Apollo Crews angle. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. That's the easier one to change than this one.
Right. And it makes the decision to do that segment even worse in retrospect, because I get Asuka got the belt because Becky Lynch had to relinquish the belt, which, by the way, sidebar, let's just recap, by the way, what we've done here in the past 4 months. Okay. So, first and foremost, Becky Lynch had to relinquish the title because she got pregnant.
Yep.
Sami Zayn relinquished the title because he didn't want to wrestle in a pandemic.
By the way, great choice.
Great choice. Support that.
Yep.
Jordan Devlin, didn't relinquish his belt, but now we have a second cruiserweight title because he is both A, in Europe, and B, possibly facing some heavy allegations and may never wrestle for WWE again.
Right.
You had to, Pete Dunne had to relinquish his half of the NXT Tag Team Championship because he's in Europe.
Yep.
Now you have MVP just taking the title from Apollo with no match. Mm-hmm. And you have Sasha taking the match from Bayley, from Asuka with no ref. What are we, the title situation is just a mess.
Yep.
And so, yeah, so to do that twice, when you didn't need to do the MVP Apollo Crews segment, because Apollo wasn't there, no one's begging for that match. Put a pin in it.
Yeah,
just do whatever you need to do down the road, because they don't want to see Asuka. They want to see Sasha walk around with that belt.
Yeah,
they want to see the two of them walk around with those gold with those. In their mind, they're like, how do we get it over to Sasha without hurting Asuka?
Yeah, they want to protect Asuka, which. Yeah, I get, because, but I mean, isn't Asuka kind of protection proof at this point? Like, even if you go with a screwy, like, interference finish, it's not like we're going to think less of Asuka.
And here's the thing, protection only matters, protection matters in a lot of things, kids. Right. But
the more you know.
Masks, I'm talking about masks.
Right.
But it only really matters when you have a crowd there.
Yeah.
Because people, no one's, the trainees at the NXT are going to cheer Asuka the same amount, whether she loses clean in the ring to Sasha or not.
Right.
If you need to get the belt off of her, now's the time to get the belt on her, off her, and let her work her way back to it at some point. It's not going to kill her heat. There is no heat.
It's all artificial heat right now.
It's artificial. They're in a studio with a captive studio audience that's being paid
with an applause sign
and boo. Yes. So you don't have to worry about that thing. And that's the other thing, that we're in this new territory. So just beat her. Have the heels cheat. I don't care. Just beat her. Asuka will be fine. And later on down the road, if you get a crowd back, which I don't know when they will, you could do it. You could have her get it back in front of a crowd and she'll get her heat back. She'll be fine.
Right.
But to do this like half-assed nonsense was just mind-blowing at the end of what I agree was the match of the night until we got to that last 2 minutes of, oh boy.
Yeah, and it sucks because nobody's going to remember the awesome wrestling that happened in this match. Like, Asuka and Sasha were doing exactly what I thought they were going to do in this match, which was put on an insanely good wrestling display. And then, we get this finish. Now, the one theory I've heard about this that sort of makes sense is that juxtapose how Sasha interfered to get Bayley to win and how Bayley interferes to get Sasha to win. Sasha makes the exact right move at the exact right time so that Bayley gets what appears, at least on the sheet and to the ref, as a clean win over Nikki Cross. Mm-hmm. Now, with this one, like, Bayley could have easily done that old trope we saw where, you know, the ref's incapacitated, so she just takes his hand and, like, you know, counts the three. And then you really have a case for how that's a legit, you know, thing. Like, you know, it wouldn't be, you know, there would still definitely be the rematch clause and everything, but in the official books, I think it would have to go down as a Sasha win. Mm-hmm. But now, because of this, she literally chose the exact wrong way to try to help her friend win the title. So maybe that's, again, a version of the slow building rift between these two, is that when Sasha helps, it's right, but when Bayley helps, it's wrong. And so trying to, I guess, give Sasha a little bit more credibility for the eventual split.
Yes. And the way that I've thought about these two ladies together is they remind me of early DX.
Yeah.
But they both think they're Sean.
That's perfect. That is perfect.
And I love that. And so, yeah, so Bailey kind of being the bumbling one who doesn't pay off, you know, it's the heel thing, because when they break up, you're going to be more sympathetic to Sasha and be like, hey, Sasha's done everything. Sasha was the good one. Mm-hmm. Sasha was the Sean.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's, so that's, again, that's fine.
If that's what they're doing, that's fine.
If that's what they're doing. But I think also there's the other part about this too, is that, you know, Raw's ratings are awful.
Right.
Lowest they've ever been. Bad. And so at this moment, if you can do something and pay it off, because, we just saw, they just announced next week, Asuka versus Sasha Banks for the women's title, and the title can change hands apparently on anything. Pinfall, countout, DQ, DQs. Interference, whatever. So yeah, they're going to main event with another women's. They're kicking the can, which again is kind of where we're at in the modern age of content, where anything to keep the story going, And this was just a bad way to keep the story going, because it didn't help anybody. Sasha didn't look good.
Nope.
Asuka didn't look good. Bailey, no one looked good after this. And you know, everyone. The feeling should be we want Asuka to get her belt back because she unfairly lost it, or technically didn't lose it.
Mm-hmm.
You could have done that and had her lost and got cheated out of it, and it would have been fine.
Right.
Also, by the way, another missed shot. Why are we doing missed in a pandemic, people? I don't care. I will say this, though. To leave it on a positive note, that match was great up until the end. I heard what the knee spot. I thought, I bought that for a second. But that's the thing. Sasha is so good at selling at this point. I cannot tell if that was a planned spot or not, or if she just slipped.
Yeah.
My
working theory here is that I think that when she goes up to the top rope and slips, I think that's an honest slip, but that she literally is so brilliant that she works in her head like, well, wait a minute, I landed on my knee on the suplex spot when I should have landed on my feet. I'm okay, but I landed on my knee. So now that she's just slipped, she so quickly goes into, oh, my knee hurts, And then that gives her time to like come back. And then right after that, it turns into her yelling at Asuka like, no, I've got to be the champ. And they go into the tit for tat punches. And I think that was just a brilliant bit of improv there.
And by the way, if you need any indication as to who's going to be the face when they break up, that moment of Sasha yelling, I need to be the champ to Asuka, that's a face moment all the way.
Oh yeah.
Like, and that's a moment where you're like, oh, she really wants this, and she's not. So that the seeds are being planted. I don't know when that's going to pay off, if that's where we're heading for SummerSlam or not, but I think I think that's where we're going.
And
I'm here for it. But also kudos to Bailey for being a good friend and helping Sasha keep her wig on in the back. Like, the whole thing just, I felt bad for everybody, because I love everybody involved in that, but that just there was just some gaga that didn't need to be there, and then some sloppiness that kind of got in the way. It was a bit of a buzzkill.
Missed it by that much. I'm almost there. Well, let's move on into what I thought was actually a pretty good match, albeit with a lot of gaga here. The WWE Championship match, Drew McIntyre, the champion, taking on Dolph Ziggler. They've been setting this up for a couple weeks here. I think they set this up pretty quickly here, but I think I'm all right with where it ends up here. But Dolph, over the last couple weeks, talking about how he's responsible for Drew's success, because he's the one that got Drew back into the company. It was him carrying him in their tag team champion run that got him there. And so, this also saw the return of Heath Slater in the midst of this feud, which I'm all for, man. More Heath Slater, please. But he's on Impact now, I think, too. So he was at the Slammiversary there this weekend. So in this one, though, Drew, in the lead up to this, he told Dolph that he can pick the stipulation. And Dolph says he's going to keep it secret until the night. So we get into the ring, and Dolph picks the stipulation. And I think this is actually really, really cool. But he says, no, we're going to have an Extreme Rules match, but only for me. So he's the only one who gets to observe the rules. Drew has to follow the rules. And if Drew breaks any of the rules, i.e. DQ or count out, the title changes hands. So I guess a handicap Extreme Rules match. And I don't think I've ever seen that before. Have you seen that before?
No, and I actually really like that idea. I think that's the sign of somebody who watches the show and pays attention. Mm-hmm. Like, these wrestlers sometimes forget, like, their own history and the rules of the world they're around. So to see, like, a heel use that and be like, hey, wait a minute, why don't I just make this incredibly unfair for him and incredibly, like, you know, easy for me? Like, that made sense. I kind of wish that they had teased that a little bit more. I don't know why we needed to wait until the pay-per-view to reveal that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just didn't know. But I actually liked that a lot because it did tell a good story. That said, in the year of our Lord 2020, you could give Dolph Ziggler the stipulation of he can use a shotgun blast to the face, and I'm not going to buy that he's going to win a title.
No,
that he's going to win the world title in 2020.
Poor Dolph Ziggler, man.
No, I mean, he's fine. He has a very nice contract. He is doing A-OK. He and Kennedy can go to a stand-up tour somewhere.
Yeah, right? There you go.
But, like,
I'd watch that.
But by the way, and can we just also point out that apparently he gets brought out of mothballs every time we need to make a new babyface champion look good?
Really, though?
The same damn thing with Kofi last year.
Yep.
And to probably lead Drew over to Randy Orton, which was the feud that Kofi also did last year. Like, what is it about? Hey, like, guys, I don't know if you know this. You got a lot of wrestlers.
Yeah, you got a lot of really good ones too.
Yeah, I know you fired a bunch back in April, but you got like, and again, it's this whole, well, we want to make sure people are cheering for our babyface champ. So we want to give them people we know they're going to boo. But again, there's no audience.
There's no booing.
do whatever you want. Crowd's going to boo. They're not going to turn. If the NXT crowd turns on you, you have really screwed up.
Also, though, but you're right, though. Like, Drew is killing it so well right now ever since the Rumble, really. He's been killing it. And you could have put him up against, like, Kevin Owens in an Extreme Rules match. Doesn't matter, man. They are still going to put on a banger, and Drew is still going to be the babyface because he is red hot right now.
Mm-hmm. He made a Bobby Lashley match watchable.
Yeah, very watchable. He made Bobby Lashley into the guy we all wanted him to be for so long.
Yeah. So, no, I don't get it. I mean, I get why, because, look, Dolph Ziggler is a tremendous in-ring talent. There's no doubt about it.
Yes, he is.
5 years ago, well, it's probably not even 5 years ago, 9 years ago at this point, that match would have been like, oh, this could be Dolph's moment.
Right.
But we've just seen time after time after time that Dolph Ziggler is not the guy. He's not going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy that makes all the other guys look good. And, you know, when he retires, you know, we're going to talk about, oh, how great he was in the ring because he made everybody look like $1 million. That's his lot in this at this point. Mm-hmm. Not to give up on the guy, but I just, as a viewer, I've seen him brought up to the main event only to fail so many times that I can't muster the energy to invest myself in the outcome of a match.
Yeah, like when did he cash in on Alberto Del Rio? That was like a decade ago, wasn't it?
It feels like it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's the last time he was a serious champion contender. And if you want to build up to this, because look, it's not that the story doesn't make sense. Ziggler versus McIntyre, you know, they were tag champs when McIntyre got called back up from NXT. And like, yeah, like that run kind of solidified McIntyre as a legitimate, like, he's really, really back, and he's really experiencing his potential now. And that run was there. So there's a good story to tell there, but they told it in like 3 weeks, you know, like he just kind of, oh, well, we need a filler match here until we get to Orton at SummerSlam. And so, I mean, like, I agree with you, though. It's just like you can't take Ziggler seriously anymore as a legitimate threat, even though when he's in a match, you think, yeah, there's many chances where he could win it. And there were a bunch of great spots in this match where he starts really waylaying on Drew with the chair in the middle of the ring. That looked brutal, including like a throat stomp on the chair. I gotta say, that elbow through the table on the outside, my God, I thought he was going to touch the ceiling. He got that high. That was a Kofi Kingston jump.
Yeah. It was 2013.
Yeah.
That Ziggler said, not to bring it back, but I was looking it up while you were talking about that.
Right,
yeah,
right.
It was 7 years ago.
7 years ago.
And ever since, it's like, no, we just, it's, he's just not, it, like, he's perpetually the guy that helps your champion look good. And that's fine to get a good match out of a guy. But, and you pointed out, this was a really good match. There was nothing wrong with this match on a technical level. They busted their ass. It looked good. Dolph is always good in the ring. From a drama standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint, there was just the only thing that I kind of kept in the back of my mind was, we haven't seen Otis in a few weeks. Again, not to speculate, but over 30 employees from the WWE tested positive for the coronavirus. There are multiple wrestlers we have not seen on television for many weeks. So whether those two facts are related,
Occam's razor, people,
whatever. But part of me in the back of my head said, well, what if they pulled Otis specifically to get us to forget about him?
Forget about him? That's...
And so that Dolph could win, and then Otis would have cashed in on Dolph, which would have made, from a storyline perspective, so much sense.
Yeah.
That, because of their big feud. It was like a 2% chance in my brain where I was like, okay, that'd be pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it was not to be. and we just Otis. Poor Otis and poor, and we got our standard Dolph Ziggler mini push for the year.
Look, this match ended great. Like, there was a spot also in the middle where Dolph hit a Famouser off the table onto the ring outside floor. There was a great spot right at the end where he hits a Famouser and then into a rock bottom onto a chair. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those really close counts. And that was where Ziggler was finally starting to do his, like, why won't you die? I was like, I don't know. So he starts calling for the sweet chin music, which I'm sorry, but I can't. It's Shawn Michaels' thing, man. It's like, just, I know he bestowed it to you, but so he's tuning up the band for the super kick, and as he's lunging forward, McIntyre does the Shawn Michaels kick up and claymores him out of his head. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a move that I consistently think is actually killing someone every time I see it hit, as the claymore kick.
Yeah, and they're shooting it perfectly too. Now they've caught the perfect camera angle to make it look like $1 million. And it took him a while to get it, because every once in a while it just kind of looks like a running drop kick officially in the beginning. But no, this looks great. And Dolph, this is why Dolph is still part of the company, because he can make everything look great. Like, was it just last year that they had him come back and eat a dozen spears from Goldberg?
Yeah, it was last year, or the year before at SummerSlam,
If you can make Goldberg look spry, you're good at your job.
Right. Yeah, because he took that spear that he, like, called him back for another one.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't want to make this, like, I'm not going to make this, like, a Dolph Ziggler hate fest. The performer is great. The character I don't believe in and haven't in a long time. So, match again, similar to the, Nikki Cross match earlier in the night. It's like, okay, that's fine. It's watchable, but I'm not invested, because the chances of me being surprised here are pretty slim.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the fact that they made it that good, I think, is a testament to how well these two work together. And obviously, they were a great tag team together. They know each other well. So Drew retains here. You would assume he's going to start that program with Randy Orton, which I think is great, because honestly, they built Drew up into such a legitimately great monster, monster of a champion here. It's going to take someone like Orton doing the work he's doing now to beat him legitimately, I think. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're going to pull the trigger on that at SummerSlam, like take the strap off him. But man, you could keep that title on Drew for as long as you want to, because he is awesome. Just forever.
Yeah, I wonder how much heat he's getting or blame he's getting for the current ratings situation, which always makes me wonder that, are we going to get a Randy Orton title reign out of this? Which I of all the things I couldn't, there's been a lot of things in 2020 I couldn't have predicted. Randy Orton being a compelling character and being one of the most compelling characters in pro wrestling in 2020 would have been at the bottom of my list.
Right.
So I'm certainly certain that he's earned it. I just hope that he's able to keep that momentum if that's what happens. Cause I wouldn't put it past Vince to say, we need a bigger star as our, champion at the moment to try to keep ratings up, and that's more Randy Orton than it is Drew McIntyre at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, if you're going to take the strap off of McIntyre, though, you better keep him up in that picture, because if anybody's earned it throughout their career, it's this guy. He needs to be there forever now,
and he's earned the right to win that again in front of a crowd.
Right, exactly, because his WrestleMania moment was stolen away by this bastard of a pandemic.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's we'll quickly do the update of Rey Mysterio, where they're like, well, actually, if the optic nerve wasn't damaged and there's not too many veins that are damaged, the doctor thinks they can save it. It's like, well, thanks for taking away all the drama of that officially. But I only say that because then they go to Bayley, who does this fantastic fake out like feigning concern for Rey Mysterio. Hell, she's just like, you know, oh, I think you're seeing double rings. I still got my belt. just let Bayley do everything she ever wants to do.
Yeah.
Oh, she's great. All right. Well, let's get to it, Lou. Oh, man. The swamp fight, the Universal Champion Braun Strowman versus old school Eater of Worlds Bray Wyatt. Man, it's kind of hard to try to recap this thing. So this is a la the Firefly Funhouse in terms of it's a cinematically filmed match. We start off here with Braun Strowman driving up, Bray Wyatt sitting in the middle of the road in a rocking chair, just doing his thing. You know, Braun says he's come home, and Bray teleports away, I guess. So, you know, did we establish that Eater of Worlds Bray has magical powers? I mean, like, I always just thought he was just kind of creepy.
He always kind of did, you know, the lights and the fire. There were spooky elements to him that were made more explicit later on. Yeah, that's fine. Sure.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, and plus, in the current iteration of Bray Wyatt, you're more than willing to go with it. And that'll actually come out later. But so once this happens, you know, he starts... He starts having to fight all these faceless people that conspicuously look very dressed like the now departed Rowan and Harper from WWE, but they have masks on, so who gives a crap? And then, can't believe I'm about to say this. He's hit over the head with a shovel by himself. By himself in the black Wyatt family mask. Because, sure, why not? So this knocks him out. He comes to in a shed. He's chained to a chair, and this is where Bray finally enters the fray with his lantern, and we get a back and forth here. It's basically a segment with Braun, you know, very loosely chained to this chair. But the one thing that I thought was of note here is that in the midst of all these ramblings, Bray said, you know, like, do you know where I've been, you know, the past couple of years? Like, I haven't been able to, you know, say anything or do anything, and now I'm out and I'm not going back. So they were playing again on this whole, you know, Bray's psyche is so fractured that all these are just like personalities in his head, and he's like bringing them forth as he needs to, which I actually really love. We'll get into that. Then Sister Abigail, a faceless Sister Abigail, shows up with a snake that bites Braun, and we get another blackout. Braun wakes up by a fire, continues to fight faceless people, and then somebody without a mask comes on. You would think that this was going to be a character, but nope. Our Universal Champion Babyface lights a man on fire and presumably kills him. And, oh, no, it doesn't just kill him. Laughs about it. He's, like, doing his crazy laugh that we've been seeing.
There has been an inordinate amount of murder on WWE programming this year. So the body count is getting shockingly high.
I mean, I'm still of the persuasion John Cena's dead in kayfabe right now.
Well, John Cena's dead. Gallows and Anderson are definitely dead.
Definitely dead.
That's canon.
AJ was supposed to be dead.
AJ is a ghost. I don't believe otherwise. That's
physical
canon.
Manifestation.
Yeah. So yeah, no, we're just murdering dudes. That's where we're at.
So Braun finally dispatches of all these people as he's laughing about the man he just murdered. We get yet again Sister Abigail showing up here on the dock behind him. And it's Alexa Bliss dressed up as Sister Abigail telling him, oh, you know, you always wanted to be with me. Come here. We can always be with me. This is, of course, harkening back to the mixed tag challenge of I don't know how many years ago. where, you know, there were Team Lil Big, and, you know, there was one moment where he caught her off the apron and they shared a look. So I guess that's something we're all supposed to remember and attain value to. But as Braun goes down the dock towards Sister Abigail, this is when Bray finally gets into the fray. So we're, what, 10, 12 minutes before Bray even throws a punch here, which I guess kind of tracks with, you know, the fun Firefly Funhouse match.
Yes, that does. But I sincerely also thought, because we haven't seen Bray physically on TV for a while, I also wondered, okay, are they just doing some trick photography to have him on camera but not be physical?
Because, maybe.
Like, maybe. But then he later on got physical, so, you know, we'll see. I don't know, but that seemed like there was a distinct lack of physical contact between the two.
Yeah, there was. And this is also finally where we get to the swamp aspects of this match. So Bray and Braun are fighting on the dock, and Braun choke slams him into a boat and then sends the boat off into the distance. I can't believe this. The boat comes back and Bray is no longer in it. Because, yeah. And so we get some more punching. Bray eventually throws Braun into the water. We get a brawl there. It looks like Braun is drowned in the water.
Add him to the body count. He's getting out,
to the body count. But he eventually gets out, and Bray is standing over him. We get more and more punching. Bray just starts wailing on him with a paddle. He turns around and says, you know, like, I didn't want to do this, you know. But as Braun slowly rises, he, you know, counters Bray's attack, throws him into the swamp, and presumably this is it. And WWE fakes us out because they give us the little logo in the corner. Mm-hmm. So Braun's looking over the water that he just threw Bray into and says, it's over, something like that. And as it fades to black, it then mysteriously comes back on. Bray mandible claws Braun into the water. Presumably everybody dies in this. We see Bray come up for air briefly, then a bunch of air bubbles under there. And then the water turns red, bright, bright red. And at the very end, we see the Fiend himself emerge from the water, laughing at the screen as we fade to black. So Bray and Braun are dead, right? Right? They got to be dead.
Braun's dead. He's at Braun the bottom of the lake.
To be dead.
Right? We've killed him.
By Universal Champ.
He's dead, bye. Unless, I guess, he'll show up on... He'll show up on SmackDown on Friday and be like, I swam to safety. Okay,
I mean, if he doesn't show up dripping wet on SmackDown, what are we doing here?
Right.
I mean, at least make it so he just got out of the swamp. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say about this. Look, you know, Lou, like, I love Bray Wyatt's character. I love the Fiend. I love, you know, bringing back the Eater of Worlds. I think is the most original, one of the best things on wrestling right now. And I like that they set up with Braun and his promo on the go home of SmackDown that, you know, like, I don't want to see the Fiend because, you know, I've got to stop him now, because if the Fiend comes out, that's everything I've ever feared about myself and stuff like that. I like making the Fiend a scarcely used, but ultimately trump card on any single opponent. But, you know, I don't know how I feel about the ending of this match, if I'm being honest with you, because is the implication here that the Fiend was doing this the whole time? So we have been in like a Firefly Funhouse type of setting, you know, because I like the idea of the Fiend bringing out the worst in somebody and, you know, like making Braun into that monster that he used to be. But what's your read on this whole match here?
Well, there's the canon interpretation, and then there's the meta logistical interpretation.
Right.
The second one's way easier for me to wrap my brain around. And that is, Braun was not supposed to be the champion. Roman Reigns was.
Yep.
Roman didn't want to. And by the way, and Goldberg wasn't supposed to be the title holder, but he decided he didn't want to lose in front of Saudi for the kids.
Yeah. Didn't think that the villain should win.
So WWE got themselves booked in a corner, and Braun ended up being the recipient of, you know, kind of the fallout of all of that. So they put the belt on him. And rather having what should have happened is that Roman was going to beat Goldberg at WrestleMania for the title. Or if the belt was involved, and that Roman was going to feud with the Fiend, and the Fiend was going to beat Roman and get the belt back. Simple. And it's fine to do that because that's Roman Reigns. You can't do that to Braun Strowman because you can't have Braun lose his very first title defense. So they're drawing this out. They had him beat Mr. Rogers Bray.
Right.
Now they've had him beat Swamp Billy Ray. Bray, and now you can have him go to the Fiend,
right?
And that's where the Fiend finally beats him,
right?
So that's the meta reason. Contextually, I don't know how you make logic of that unless you just say that all of these beings are different parts of Bray,
right?
And the Swamp cult leader Bray that was gone, because remember when Firefly Funhouse Bray showed up, he sawed that version in half and said that part of me is dead now,
right?
And he says, well, this part came back alive because Braun summoned him when he did that sheep mask thing,
right.
And so, okay, fine, you brought him out. Braun beats him back to hell or wherever, and now the Fiend has to do the job. Okay, right. Fine. Okay, this is far from the dumbest thing they've ever done.
Well, it tracks all the way back to Money in the Bank when he beat Mr. Rogers Bray. It was, you know, he kept saying when the mask was on, he was like, I told him I could get you, you know, like, so they've been setting this up. You're right. Of like, the Fiend is something that Bray might be kind of backwardsly trying to protect Braun from, you know, he fought him as Mr. Rogers Bray because, you know, he thought he could convince him to, you know, join up again and that would keep him from the Fiend. And now he resurrects, you're right, Swamp Bray, you know, as again, okay, so Mr. Rogers didn't work. Okay, well, let's go to the iteration that did get you into the fold, and that will bring you back in. But yes, now that that has failed again, there's nowhere left to go. I can't protect you anymore type thing.
Yeah, and that allows this whole thing to stretch out over the course of 3 months, and then when the Fiend gets it back, okay, then that's fine. There was at least a feud and a story involved in it, if that's where we're going to go.
Right.
Go back with it. There's also some have made the point of Bray, of the Fiend not really working well without an audience because of the reaction that he can get. I don't know if I buy that 100%, but I think personally he works better because then you can do spooky stuff and stuff and edit and make him more supernatural.
Lest you forget the go home before WrestleMania, that segment with John Cena in the ring where he's looking at the Fiend up in the rafters and then Bray shows up behind him and says, run, like, come on, or let me in. Like that was awesome.
It's good stuff. So I don't have a problem with any of that. This was, I mean, I don't know what I was expecting, but I got it. You know,
that's a good way to put it.
You know, it was a swamp fight. It was, I think these cinematic moments, we're going to live with them, and there's going to be, you know, when this is all said and done, we'll do a power rankings of the best cinematic, you know, and this for me falls, it's not as bad as, you know, the ninja segment with the Street Profits last time. It's better than the Money in the Bank match that we got, but we still haven't hit the high bar yet of the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse match. And I do feel that we might be dipping into the like diminishing returns portion of this.
I agree.
That the longer we go, the dumber these are going to get. I actually like the Alexa Bliss thing because I think I'm one of the five people who watch the Mixed Match Challenge. Yeah. And I actually think those two together have this kind of weird chemistry that was fun. So, and it drew back. And again, I'm always for WWE remembering their history, the character's history, because they forget it so easily and so frequently that just the fact that they acknowledged that and used it against Braun, I actually was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So I am good with that. But then you got, you know, you're lighting guys on fire and you're drowning people in the river and this is what we're going to have. And if it can't be actual wrestling, it's gotta be fun. And this fell somewhere in between where there were some fun moments. It wasn't quite what I hoped it would be. And also, by the way, I think some of that's just the fact that I don't know if this is Braun's element.
Yeah.
Relying on him to be kind of the emotional acting centerpiece of this maybe isn't the greatest call.
Never really been his forte. Now, I will admit his segment on the Go Home SmackDown was good, you know, where he's just yelling and going crazy, and then he just absolutely murders John Morrison in the ring like that. Right. That I thought was interesting and something I hadn't seen from him. But yeah, I love that they do this with The Fiend too, but I don't know if this was supposed to be The Fiend, because that Firefly Funhouse match with Cena was so awesome and so groundbreaking and introspective that, like, and you know, just you talking about the idea of doing that with Roman Reigns would have been even crazier, man, because you could have turned Roman Reigns into like a legitimate heel at that point, you know, like just have the Fiend change him. So I would be into it. Like, you know, if Braun comes back on SmackDown and he's like, you know, oh, you know, I barely survived with my life, but it's over now, you know, because presumably he doesn't know that the Fiend emerged from the swamp. So say like in kayfabe, Braun gets away, he swam away or something, and then the Fiend emerges. And so now it's clear to us that the Fiend is coming for Braun Strowman, but he doesn't know that yet. Then that can turn into something where with that match at SummerSlam, if it happens, then Braun like turns into the monster again.
You don't think Braun has the WWE Network and can watch the replay?
Well, that's a hole in the theory, yes. But, you know, like that's kind of what like bugged me about the Fiend coming out at the end is like I would have liked for it just to just have the water turn red. And I can infer from that what that means. I know that red is the Fiend's color, you know? Right. And then like that's so like even – I think I would have preferred it if, you know, Bray pulled him in and everything. And then Braun like, you know, somehow finds his way up and he's like floating away like exhausted or something but thinking he's won. And then just like – I don't know. You could have even done like the glove coming out, you know, the Fiend's glove or something like that. I just don't think I needed it explicitly as this, you know? Like I just wanted it to just kind of be like – okay, now you all know what's coming and we're just going to tease it. So that's what I think.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're going to go. I think, and again, they tried to make this a spectacle. They tried to make it something unique that we haven't seen before. I can't fault them for trying. It just, this one wasn't as great. And I think, at some point we're trying to make Braun into, you know, a fully fleshed out character when the meat and potatoes behind him was this big monster who just liked to smash things real good.
Right.
And if we could get to that at some point versus the Fiend, I think that's something interesting. I would have liked to see him like destroy more things other than in this match. Like if he destroyed, you know, watch him flip a cabin or something, I don't know, as opposed to setting dudes on fire, which is a weird baby face move. But
right.
So yeah, but it is. But look, it didn't overstay its welcome. It wasn't too terribly long. I think it was like 12, 13 minutes.
Yeah,
long,
not too so long at all.
It's fine. It is what it is. But yeah, I'm sure that's where we're heading for SummerSlam.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, folks. Well, that is the horror show with Extreme Rules. Still doesn't sound right. That is our review of that one. So I think the next time we're going to be coming your way. Does NXT have a takeover coming up soon?
They are doing one the eve of SummerSlam. So okay, that's
so it'll
a big,
be a double bill there.
Double bill weekend there, yeah.
So we will have to pull double duty for you guys, and we'll be bringing you the NXT TakeOver and SummerSlam coming up. If you want to see more from the Front Row Network, our interviews, our articles, anything else from us, you can go to nprillinois.org, search for us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, the Front Row Network, or and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. If you want to see my personal musings, I am at jgeck, J-G-O-E-C-K on Twitter. Lou, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at the fake Lou Hare, or they can follow me on Instagram, Lou Hare.
There you go. So we will be musing, hopefully, about Raw and SmackDown and NXT for the next couple of weeks and just kind of trying to set this up. So, all right, that is going to do it here. Thank you for bearing with us here on this Extreme Rules horror show and Extreme Rules breakdown here for the Front Row Network. I'm Jeremy Gettner.
And I'm Lou Hare.
And we will see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.